Coming up in this week's Triton Spotlight, we're chatting with UC San Diego cross-country coach Nate Garcia. The 2000 UCSD grad will reflect on his favorite memories as a Triton, tell us how a history major got into coaching, and what to expect from this year's team. That's all coming up in a moment in the Triton Spotlight. And with that, we welcome you to episode 58 of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. I'm your host, Jeff Turiel. Whether you found us on your favorite podcast platform or on UCSDTritons.com, we're so happy you've joined us this week on TritonCast. Before we get to this week's conversation, let's go around campus. Congrats to former Triton goalkeeper Josh Cohen, who was named to Soccer America's elite list of U.S. players. You may remember Josh was our guest on episode 11 of TritonCast. And speaking of congratulations, women's soccer volunteer assistant coach Jackie Altschuld recently signed a pro contract with San Diego Wave FC of the NWSL. And it's been a great week competitively for the Tritons, with both soccer programs earning big road wins and women's volleyball knocking off Cal. You can read more and check out upcoming events, such as men's water polo hosting the Triton Invitational this weekend, on UCSDTritons.com. Now it's on to this week's Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with UC San Diego cross-country head coach, Nate Garcia. Nate, I want to start with your time as a scholar athlete at UC San Diego. How did you end up coming to school here?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. You know, it was an interesting journey. I'm a local boy. I grew up in San Diego. I went to high school 15 miles away from UC San Diego. So it wasn't the school that I looked at first, honestly. Like I did, like a lot of prospects do. I looked, you know, first all over the country, realized I wanted to stay in California, started narrowing that down, ended up applying to four schools. I really didn't know much about UC San Diego at the time. It was just the school over there, you know, in University City. And did a little research, came by, you know, one of the, you know, campus admit day type situations, and really sort of fell in love with the campus, fell in love with the fit. Being able to stay close to family, being able to get a world-class education, and getting the opportunity to compete. I was given permission to try out for the team my first year and snuck onto the roster, second to last man on the roster my freshman year, and ended up launching into a collegiate career that was really rewarding for me.
Second to last on the roster. I mean, was there a posted ranking on the wall, or how did you find that out?
Yeah, back in those days, everything was very numbers based. So we did a series of time trials, and whether or not you were part of the 20-man roster was based on your placing in those time trials. And I was definitely the 19th man. So I was fortunate to make it on there and get an opportunity to run with some guys that were super talented and helped make me better.
Wow. So it all comes down to those time trials. Well, what if you just had a bad day or slept poorly the night before? It all comes down to one day, right?
Yeah. I mean, and to some extent, that's the nature of, well, all our sports, sure, right? Like you got to have a good day on the right day. But that was definitely a high pressure situation. That was definitely a stressful week and a stressful period of time. It's definitely something that I've modified a little bit the way that we do team selection now, to make sure that, you know, we're getting a even more complete picture of where they are. And honestly, even when I was trying out for the team, Ted Van Arsdale, who was the coach here, he wasn't going to cut someone just because they had a bad day in the time trial. You know, like the numbers were making a lot of the decision, but he always said, like, that's one of the jobs as a coach, is to be able to make the hard decision even when the numbers, you know, are showing you something different. So the numbers were definitely the primary guideline, but Ted always made sure he put together the right group of guys and gals.
So we're talking mid-90s here in the sport of cross country, or at least as it relates to UC San Diego. Was there recruiting then, or was everybody a tryout?
Yeah, there was definitely still some recruiting. It was a little bit of a mix. I know, like, if my incoming class, there were, you know, a couple guys that had been a little bit more recruited. Ted had more conversation with them in the buildup, that, you know, come by for a campus visit, stuff like that. And then there were guys more like me that were more pure walk on. You know, I literally, my first recruiting conversation with Ted was at that admit day. I went and checked out the track because honestly, even still to this day, every college campus I go to, I go and check out the track. You know, it's just, it's hardwired into me at this point. But I was checking out the track and happened to be standing right outside of his office. And he wandered out there and asked if I was a runner, asked if I was a, you know, an incoming student. And then he gave me the phone number of an older guy on the team and said, hey, reach out to this guy. Maybe you could run with him this summer and you can try out. And so it was my whole recruiting process was just that. There were definitely other guys who had better marks in high school who were more actively recruited. But it was definitely more of a mix back then.
And if I'm understanding you correctly, if you didn't happen to have that chance meeting with Ted, you were still coming to UC San Diego, correct?
Yeah. You know, coming up in San Diego area in running, I was a medium-sized fish in a really small pond. You know, I went to Claremont High School. At the time, we were the smallest school division in California, which at that time was just Division IV. We were in a small league that had some good runners come through it, but it wasn't a powerhouse. And so I sort of knew where I existed within the city. And at the time, there were literally future Olympians running high school in San Diego. And I assumed that was the level you had to be at in order to go to college to run. I just had no concept of how many opportunities there were. So I got recruited by one other school, and, you know, coach had reached out to me and I just didn't feel like they were the right fit, but no one else had reached out. So I just assumed that was it. I didn't understand the role that I was supposed to play in the process. And so I was just picking a school based on what I felt was the right fit, academically and socially and location wise. And so it was such a blessing to have that chance encounter. And honestly, so much of my story involves these chance encounters that just sort of everything broke the right way for me to have, I mean, literally a life-changing experience of being on this team.
And in your time at UC San Diego, as a cross-country runner, member of the track team, maybe outside of athletics, what are some of your favorite memories?
You know, the relationships that we built with, you know, amongst the guys and the gals on the cross country team and the track team, and honestly within the athletic department as a whole, were just huge for me. You know, it was such an opportunity for personal growth for me, and getting the chance to just spend time. And honestly, you know, there's big fun events and stuff like that, but so much of it was just the casual, the time between class, just the time just sitting around, just being with these folks that we had spent so much time building relationship and developing these connections. It was just, you know, it was so instrumental in sort of helping me become who I am today. And honestly, just, it was so much fun, you know, being a part of the overall Triton community, the Triton athletic community. And that was such a big push. I know it remains today, and it's something that we've kept alive. And I know as a coaching body, we work to keep alive, and as a whole athletic department, we work to keep alive. But this real sense of connectivity between the teams. When I was competing here and we were Division III, the majority of the fans in the stands were the other athletes. And so there was just this sense of camaraderie between the teams within the department that really made UCSD feel like home, even beyond just the guys on the team that I was on. Academically, I had some amazing professors. I took some really, really cool classes. And so there was lots of fun memories outside of the athletic side, but I guess not surprisingly, given my current role and position, the athletic side was a huge part of my time on campus.
I do want to talk academics for a minute, and it's a cliche, a question I ask almost everybody, but you know, anybody going through classes at UC San Diego, it's very rigorous and time demanding. So how did you personally balance the demands of being a scholar athlete with also the scholar part, being a good student as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to tell you a secret. That's not really a secret to anyone who knows me. I'm a huge nerd. Like, I love learning. I love just sort of acquiring information. Like, it's fun for me. Like, some of the classes were really hard and some of the classes really tested me. And I saw different letters on my transcript that I hadn't seen when I was in high school. I just put it that way. But I enjoyed the process of like gathering the information and just doing that scramble. And I think like any scholar athlete, you just have to go through the, you have to go through the decision-making process of figuring out where you're going to make your compromises. You know, obviously more hours could have been put into athletics, more hours could have been put into academics, more hours could have put into social life or whatever, but you sort of figure out where that sweet spot is for you of, I am okay to sacrifice this or this or this in each of those areas. And so it was just a matter of leaning on the older guys and gals on the team, of figuring out how to do that and how to strike that balance. And then just trying to stay connected to the joy of going through the learning process. I know it sounds so nerdy.
No, not at all. It's fascinating because everybody has a different path. For you coming in as a freshman, was it a big adjustment to manage, or did you settle in pretty quickly to organizing yourself to know that, you know, this is what it's going to take for me to be successful academically, and then also over here on this other side competitively?
It was a big adjustment. High school was easy for me academically. And when I got here, I had not been in a classroom with 200 people who were that high powered academically. And it was definitely a shock to the system of, oh, I'm going to have to work a lot harder to keep up. And so it was definitely an adjustment. And there were definitely spots along the way that I stumbled on it and had to sort of regroup and lean on the people around me to sort of help me get back on the path correctly. And you know, as is always the case within our department, I had some folks on my team that were just absurd in the classroom, you know? And so I had this model and I had this sort of standard that I was trying to keep up with, but then I also had resources around me that who could help me figure it out as well. So it was definitely a tough adjustment. But I think the scaffolding in place within our team and within the department helped make it doable.
When you were a Triton, the department was getting ready to transition from Division III to Division II. Was there a palpable excitement, or did it affect you on a daily basis, or what was that vibe?
Yeah, there was definitely excitement there. It was my fifth year on campus, you know, and using as a grad student and using my last year of eligibility when we made the transition to D2. It was definitely an exciting time. Cross country and track were in a slightly different scenario than the rest of the department. Because we had been affiliated members within the CCAA since, I believe, 92.
Gotcha.
And so we had been in that conference and we had been competing against those D2 schools for our conference championship meets. And then we would go to the regional or national championships in Division III. And so we would sort of do a little bit of a back and forth. And so when we made the transition to D2, our conference affiliation didn't change at all. We stayed, you know, going to those CCAA meets, but all of a sudden now we were going to, you know, the next level of regional and national championship.
Oh, that's so interesting. Flipping back to the academic side, you earned your bachelor's in history. What was your intention? What were you planning to do with your life upon graduation?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I didn't know. I wasn't one of these folks coming out of high school who like had a career plan or sort of knew what I wanted to do. When I got to college and realized I needed to pick a major, I looked at, okay, what classes do I like the best? And I just said, well, I really like my history classes. I really like my poli sci classes. So I went, tossed it around between which of those two I was going to go for. Ended up choosing history and doing, you know, all but a class or two of a poli sci double major, just because I liked the material. And I figured I would figure it out what I was going to do with my life once I graduated. Which obviously became a little stressful as I got later in the college career, as I still didn't have a plan, but I was just, hey, I'm going to go with the thing that seems fun and I will try to figure it out as I go. So that's sort of what took me into that area of study. I think I tossed around, you know, the idea of working in politics, the idea of potentially teaching, you know, all those things were things that had sort of bounced around in my head, but I hadn't ever really settled on anything.
Would you still consider yourself a history buff now?
I definitely enjoy it. Yeah. I definitely enjoy history. I enjoy when I have the opportunity, you know, reading, just different historical accounts and different books that way. It's definitely something that I enjoy.
Nate Garcia, our guest this week on TritonCast. So how did you transition from history major and grad school and to coaching?
Yeah, This is another one of those sort of kismet type situations, or guided by God or the fates, or however you want to consider the universe. I decided in order to stay a fifth year to complete my eligibility, I was too proud to stretch out my, or too dumb to stretch out my undergraduate degree 5 years. I was going to graduate in four, no matter what. So I stuck around and did a year of grad work in the teacher education program here at UC San Diego. At that time, you took classes for a minor, and then in 1 year, you would be able to get your credential. And I thought that was a great sort of stopgap measure. I mean, being a substitute teacher was the original gig economy. You know, you pop in, you get paid $75 a day at the time. It was a great way to sort of fill in while I figured out what I wanted to do with my life. So I went through the teacher education program, did all my student teaching, all of that, got my credential. And when I graduated, I wasn't entirely sure that I wanted to teach in the classroom. I loved the instruction part. I didn't really like the classroom management side. And everyone around me is like, oh, you're going to love it when you get your own classroom. Just go for it. Go for it. So I got a job as a teacher. I was in I was working at a charter school, working with junior high age students who had educational difficulties along the way. And so they each had, you know, their own sort of independent education plan and different approaches to how they were going to manage their education. And I was in charge, and I got my backside kicked. It was hard, and I just got smoked. I mean, by the time we got to, I don't know, October, I was just like, yeah, I don't want to teach. Like, this is so hard. Like, I am just getting just rolled here on a daily basis. And so I looked into going back to school for history, to either get a master's or PhD and then potentially teach, you know, at the collegiate level, either, you know, community college or at a 4-year university. Because again, I liked the instruction part. I just wasn't prepared to be dad on the scene for 8 hours a day. You know, I was 23. I was not mature enough or prepared, or just the personality to be that guy. You know, I loved the teaching. I loved the stand and deliver part of it. I just didn't like the other part. And so I went, I applied to grad school. And honestly, I think a lot of it at the time was me retreating back into something I knew how to do. I knew how to be a student, you know? And so I had launched into the world and I said, let's go back to doing the thing that I feel safe with. Applied to a couple schools during that time. Had been meeting up with Coach Ted Van Arsdale, who was the former head coach here. And him and I would just meet up for lunch, just hang out. And we were chatting, and he was looking at the potential of hiring a new assistant coach. And I was helping him run some names and talk about some potential fits amongst our alum group. And sent out my applications. And then about a week later, he asked, hey, what about you? Like, would you want to be my assistant coach? I told him, like, I've got these applications out. Like, I got to wait and see. He's like, no problem. Let me know. And we'll move from there. And so then I did, you know, multiple weeks of just that full stress out of, hey, I need a sign. I need to know what I'm supposed to do with my life. Like, all of this. And as is the case most of the time when you apply to school, I'd only applied to two places. I applied to a school that I was confident I could get into, and one that I thought was a little bit more of a reach. And I got the letter back from the reach school and I was rejected. I was like, well, that hurts, but okay, let's see. Let's, you know, I still got the other school and I've got this other situation potentially. And then I got the letter back from the quote unquote safety school and I got rejected.
Oh, wow.
And I went full UCSD. I'm like, oh, heck no. Like, I'm going to appeal. Like, what are they talking about? Like, have you seen my transcript? Like, I was ready to roll. Right. And then someone very wise in my life pulled me aside and said, hey, weren't you the guy wanting a sign? And I was like, yeah, but I wanted like light from heaven. I wasn't looking for slammed doors. Like, what are you talking about here? And they're like, hey, pay attention to what's happening here. So I reached out to Ted, told him, look, I'll give you a year, but these people are not going to reject me. If anything, I will reject them. Like, I'm going to reapply after a year. And he said, no problem. And, so I signed on and I made it, you know, we made all the plans for how it was going to work. You know, I was, bagging groceries at Vaughn's, and I was working as an overnight janitor to sort of help make all the ends meet. And while working as an assistant coach, and I made it to about September. And I was hooked. The GRE scores went into the back of the filing cabinet. I never pulled them back out. And it was just, this is what I was looking for. This is the opportunity to teach, you know, to be an educator, to be partnered with students who want to be involved, want to be, you know, want to be there, want to be accomplishing these things in a sport that I love, it sort of ticked all of the boxes. So
that is awesome. And so clearly it was not a full-time position, at least at that time. Did did it even exist before, or was this a new position?
No, there had been an assistant coach in place.
Got it.
Previously. And then that coach had pivoted to a different role within the department. And so, Ted was looking to fill that position. But yes, it was a very, part-time position, or as we all say, it was full-time in everything but the pay.
That's correct. Of course.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from Ted? Why was he such a great coach and mentor for you?
Yeah, so much, so much. I mean, one of the things that was really a hallmark of the Ted Van Arsdale experience was really a dedication to doing things the right way and treating people the right way. And he sort of really harped on, and if you do those things, the specifics are honestly can even be less important. Because if you're doing things with the right intention and really being mindful of people around you and taking care of the people around you and trying to help develop the people around you, you're going to A, enjoy the process, but also find success. And that was something that honestly took me a little bit of time to really wrap my brain fully around. You know, I was a UCSD kid. I was going to figure it out. My brain was going to figure it out for me. I didn't need to worry about the universe around me or the people around me. Like, I'm going to figure out the right path forward. I'll be in charge. So I'll lay the path and everyone will go and we'll be successful. And Ted's lesson of like, and you got the best plan in the world, but if you don't have these relationships, if you don't have this connection, no one's going to follow you other than out of, you know, obedience, but it's not going to be what you're looking for. And then those lessons that I didn't realize when I was a student on the team, those lessons that he was modeling, those lessons that he was putting into place, just really snapped into focus when I got the opportunity to sit on the other side of the desk and work with him. And just watching, realizing the ways that he had just seamlessly integrated this push and this care for the entire person and his commitment towards, I'm going to help you grow, even if it's painful for you at times. Like it was something that when it snapped into focus, I was like, yep, this is so much bigger than just, can we shave a couple seconds off your PR?
Isn't it funny how that works?
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It makes for a really rewarding experience. And he just did it with so much grace that it never felt forced. It never felt manufactured. It never felt put on. He didn't get himself psyched up to go out to practice to put on the Ted show. It was just always Ted. So, yeah. So it definitely someone that I've modeled a lot of the things that I've tried to do after, obviously in my own way, you know, just like, you know, different personalities, but trying to develop that authenticity is something that I think is a challenge for all coaches. And it's something that I think stretches us, you know, every year the team's a little bit different. So how you can effectively connect with and impact the new group that's in front of you is, I think, one of the biggest challenges and some of the most fun in our profession.
We're joined by Triton cross country coach Nate Garcia this week on Triton Cast. So you were an assistant under Ted for 5 seasons, I believe. And then he stepped aside. Did you have a sense that was coming?
You know, I knew that he was, you know, excited. He had bought a piece of, him and his wife had bought some property up in the mountains. I know he was excited to be able to spend more time there. I suspected that something was coming. I didn't really know all the timeline and I wasn't really sure what that looked like. You know, was that months, was that years, was that decades away? He had done a lot. I, in retrospect, recognizing he had done a lot to prep me to be able to step into a leadership role. But when he announced at the, you know, at the end of his contract that he wasn't going to be coming back the next year, it was definitely a shock to, you know, everyone in the department. It was definitely something that he put in 15 years as the head coach, and he had put in a really good run, had a tremendous amount of success, and it was one of those things that you looked at and you're like, well, this could go on for another 15 easily, you know? And so it was surprising. But yeah, it was again, an amazing opportunity for me personally, to have had a chance to work with him and then get a chance to step into that position when he stepped away, you know, on an interim basis.
So when he stepped aside, in your mind, was it a foregone conclusion that, you know, I'm the guy, this is going to be my job, and I just have to prove that to everybody else?
I believed I could do it. I believed that he had really helped set the table for me. You know, having me have relationships with people in the administration, having me understand how things worked, you know, within the department, within the team, outside of practice. I knew, and now years later, I believe at the time I knew that I could for sure do it. But I think the issue was, you know, we had an extremely successful cross country and distance program, and it was going to be a very attractive job for other people to step in. And the position deserved someone who was going to be able to not only maintain what we've done, but help the program take the next step. So when the department announced that we were going to be doing a national search for the position, that didn't surprise me. I, you know, as an alum, I felt like that was the right thing. Like, we needed to make sure that we hired the right person. I got the opportunity to apply. I did that first cross country season on an interim basis while we did the search. And, you know, we were very fortunate. We had an extremely successful season in my interim year, which I know I am confident helped my application. So when I got the opportunity to step into the role, you know, formally and more permanently, I was ecstatic and super excited to be able to continue to be part of the legacy of the program.
What kind of pressure did you put on yourself in that interim year, knowing that you needed to prove yourself, but also now you're the person in charge, you're the decision maker for the program, and not, you know, you didn't have that fallback of having Ted there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. As an assistant coach, when you're sitting at the smaller desk, you are the smartest guy in the office. Like, you know everything. I knew everything that Ted should have been doing or wasn't doing the way that he should or what he should have said there. And then all of a sudden you slide behind the big desk and you realize, oh my goodness, I don't know any of this. Like, I don't know how to make this work. There was a lot of pressure. Ted left a very loaded cabinet. We were a pair of strong teams, both on the men's and women's side. And so there was definitely that privilege of getting to work with folks that were really prepared to run fast, but there was pressure of, don't come in here and screw this up. You know, like, we've built this up to a great place, and that responsibility to do that for that immediate group. And then also for myself professionally, of like, hey, if this season goes sideways, like, you're going to be out looking for another job, you know? And so that was definitely a high pressure season. We had great leadership on the team who really helped make my life easier and sort of making the transition work. We had a couple folks on the team. I still remember, you know, one of the guys on the team walked into my office one of the first couple of weeks of the season and sat down. He's like, hey, Nate, I want to talk to you about your new role. And I was like, oh boy, like, oh, this conversation could be really rough. And he's just like, I've got you. Like, I'm so excited you're doing this. Like, I will support you. Like, whatever you need, you tell me, I'll make sure it all works. And I was just like, even to this day, man, I talk about that and I get a little misty because, like, without that guy stepping up that way, I don't know how this would have all turned out, because throughout the season, he was consistently a voice for, let's give it a chance. Let's see how this is going to work. Let's give it a chance. Let's trust the process that Nate's going through, that the department's going through. And it really made a huge impact on my ability to be successful that year, but then also my ability to sort of move forward and the program's ability to try to make that transition from a legend in, you know, within the coaching world in general to a new, even though it was a somewhat seamless handover, it's still new, you know? And so the ability to make that transition, I don't think would have happened without the support of that first team.
That's so cool to hear. Well, now you're in your 16th season as the program's head coach. Yeah. I'll let you digest that for a moment.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But how have you been able to sustain what Ted had built and again, build upon that? So how have you had sustained success? What have been some of the keys there?
Yeah. So for us, I think initially so much of what I was doing was just maintain Ted's program, you know, with a little bit of my personality on it. And I think that worked to a certain extent initially, But I think, you know, after a few years, cracks started to develop because it wasn't authentically me. It wasn't 100%, you know, where my passions lie. And there was a bit of it that was performative. Like I was trying to be the Nate version of Ted. And that I'm not that good of an actor. You know, at a certain point, those cracks begin to develop and people, you know, connected to the team feel that inauthenticity and they're looking for something more real and more connected. And so we went through a stretch where I really had to reevaluate how we were going to attack things. And as the program continued to develop and continued its time in D2, and as we began, you know, as rumblings on campus began to happen about a potential move to D1, and the talent on the team, you know, the high school marks kept getting faster and faster, and there was a little bit of the team culture slipping. And so sat down with my assistant coach at the time and assistant coaches at the time, and we hacked through what's our philosophy, what's our mission, like why are we doing this, like what's the purpose of this team existing, you know, and then how are we going to structure some core values to direct these decisions that we're making, so we're not making these decisions in a vacuum, and so that everything sort of connects to one another. And when we sat down and really hashed that all out, and then really tried to get a feel for what's a win for us, you know, obviously we know, you know, win the race, run the fastest time in the history of the universe. That is a win. But there's a whole bunch of other wins as well. I can't believe that if you don't set a world record every race, then everyone in that race is a loser. Like there's other ways to sort of measure success and progress and development. And so going through that process really allowed things for me to snap into focus of how I could really connect with being a more authentic leader and being someone who is committed to the individuals on our team running personal bests. Absolutely. We're going to make people faster. But beyond that, the process of personal growth and development in the sport and outside of the sport. And that for me unlocked, again, tying back to what we talked about earlier, unlocked for me the part of what Ted was doing that I didn't always get. And it was just, it finally clicked into the language for me of like, oh, yep, I get it. And this fires me up. This brings me to work with a smile on my face every day. This is what I'm here for. So it's been a journey.
Yeah, no question. And I wanted to ask you too. I mean, from your time here in the late 90s, when athletics was in Division III, getting ready to move to Division II, of course, now we're in D1 and we'll talk about that, but just campus, how has campus changed and grown?
Well, everywhere where I used to park my car, there are buildings now. So it's huge. And when I graduated, I think there was about 14,000 undergrads on campus. So we have more than doubled that number, you know, quickly approaching tripling that number.
Right.
And the growth and expansion has been exciting. I mean, it's just been so cool to see more people catch a vision for what UCSD could be. I mean, I feel like when I was a student here, there were a lot of people that were excited to be on campus, but there were a lot of people that, you know, didn't get into UCLA or didn't get into Berkeley. And so then they went to UCSD. And to watch over the years that evolve and develop into, no, UCSD is my first choice. Like, this is where I want to go to school. And the number of applicants that we get and the type of students that we get now, it's just the next level. And as an alum, it's so exciting. It's so exciting to walk around and be like, well, I don't know what building that is. Like, I walked around campus 3 weeks ago and I don't know where that building came from, you know? So it's such a cool time to be a part of a campus that is so committed to growth. And I think our upper administration within the university itself has such a great vision for what we can be and like the right way to get there. And it's so exciting. It feels like a privilege to be a part of something that is, you know, in my mind, just a rocket ship.
Well, and in concert with that, athletics, of course, D3, D2, and now Division I, you talked about a few minutes ago, the rumblings that the program might move Division I. Well, of course we know now that happened. What was the mood in your program when the vote took place and that was approved, and then the Big West membership happened, and of course now as we go through the actual four-year transition, how has that mood changed in your program?
You know, it's something that we're really excited about. You know, for years, you know, we loved our time in the CCAA. We had great competitive relationships with teams in the CCAA. We had great competitive opportunities within Division II. But there was always a part of us that also compared ourselves to our sister UC schools. You know, everyone on our team took a visit to Santa Barbara or UC Irvine, right? Like everyone on our team considered Davis at some point, and everyone on their team considered us at some point. And so there's real natural rivalries with it within us, you know, UC schools, and sort of looking at where do we stack up against them? How do we match up with them? And the opportunity for us to move to Division I and get to match up with them on more even footing and in an environment that is like not just theoretical was so exciting for us. You know, we were stoked to be able to make that jump. And look, as a campus, like everyone else on campus is trying to be the absolute best university in the country, if not the world. And the opportunity for us in an athletic environment to do the same is just perfect synergy. And it's super exciting. Now, it's hard. I mean, it is no joke. Division I track and field, Division I cross country. I mean, I got the opportunity to go see the world championships of track and field this past summer. And there's a bunch of college students that are competing for all these different countries at the highest level of the sport. And as a fan, I'm sitting there saying, this is an amazing meet. This is so much fun. As a coach, I'm sitting there saying, oh my goodness, I have to figure out how to beat these people. You know, so it's definitely the next level, but it's something that, you know, our program has been super excited about, a big supporter of making the transition. And like I said, nothing against our time in D2, loved it. It was an awesome experience. Our time in D3, I loved being a D3 athlete, but just this opportunity to move up to the D1 level is something that we're super excited about. Our scholar athletes are super excited about. Our alums have been super supportive of. It's something that we're so excited to be here and sort of be up at this level. We can't wait to finish this this reclassification process and be fully eligible for championship participation and get a chance to compete at that level.
Well, I got to imagine your scholar athletes have been so excited to have been part of this process. But of course, leading into the start of the first Division I season, the COVID-19 pandemic hits that we all know about, and your first Division I season didn't happen. How tough was that? And how did you message that to the team? And how did they, work out together, even though they were remote, those kinds of things?
Yeah, it was a really tough time. We were in the midst that we had just, you know, a third of the way through our final D2 track season. And we had big goals, both at the conference level, at the national level. We had people, you know, we had fifth year students who had stayed the extra year to hit that one last D2 season. And then to watch that whole thing get shut down and us, you know, just lose the rest of that season was hard. Right away, we sat down as a staff and looked at, okay, how are we going to, at the time we were thinking, okay, this is just, we need to figure out how we're going to manage these next 3 months, because we figured, hey, it's just the track season, we'll be back to full speed and cross, you know, not knowing what all exactly COVID-19 was going to be. And one of the things that we really look to do is, hey, we don't want to just try to tread water. Like, we want to try to use this as an opportunity. It's not an opportunity any of us would have picked, but it's really rare, you know, within the collegiate environment where you get a season where you can just focus on getting better and you're not trying to get yourself up for competition. And so that's how we messaged it to the team of, hey, we're going to make a little pivot in the way we're doing the training. We're going to attack this specific skill set, and we're going to help you make a quantum leap in your ability all at once while we're not needing to prep for a race.
And did you get buy-in for that?
We did. I mean, some more than others, obviously. Like, there's always going to be a spectrum, but just that idea of, okay, let's use this now. And that's one of our, that's our first core value as a team: grow from everything. You know, every meeting, every practice, every race, every interaction, how can I use this to get better? How can I grow from this? And so we just went right back to, you know, right back to our core values and said, this is what we're talking about. Like, this is what it looks like now, you know, and we got good buy-in from it. It was hard, obviously, when we got to cross country and the 3 month, like, just let's grow during these 3 months turned into another full season. So that was definitely challenging. We were fortunate to be able to do some practices. I know a lot of teams around the country weren't even able to practice during that fall 2020 season. So we were fortunate to be able to practice together, a lot of social distanced work, a lot of, you know, opportunities to keep each other safe, but still work on developing as a team. So it was hard. And it's something that I hope that we never have to do again, but it's something that, that we persevered through.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned track because we haven't even talked about that in this conversation, but in your cross country off season, quote unquote, you are also an assistant with the track and field program. So for you, what's the different mindset? And then also getting to work with Tony and Darcy, as you did for all these years, what did you maybe learn from them that could have helped you as a head coach?
Yeah. It's definitely a mindset shift, you know, in the track season, the distance runners, who I'm responsible for cover five of the track events, you know, five championship track events. And so you take the 16 guys, 20 women on the cross country team, and then you spread them out across five different events where they're going to specialize. And it gives a much deeper opportunity or expanded opportunity for people to rise to the top and be the leader within that specific group and really use their specialized skills and abilities in that setting. So it's a lot of fun to watch people sort of morph into that role, coming out of a more team-oriented cross-country season into the more individually focused and do this individually so the team can be successful type approach. So I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's a really cool way to be able to feed both sides of people's personalities. And then honestly, the track season is great because it's not just us distance runners, but you have the other 16 track events happening. So you have your sprinters, you have your jumpers, you have your throwers, you have your hurdlers, you have your multi-event athletes, you have all these different types of people, all these different specialists, and it creates such a fun, dynamic environment. And going to a track meet, you know, you're out at a track meet for 6-7 hours, but you're watching all your teammates just crush in all these different spots. It's really fun and it's really motivating. So I think the track season is great. I know it's a very busy year, you know, where there's really not much of an off season, but I love it. I love getting that chance to do the cross country season, which has its own sort of special flow and vibe to it. And then the track season that is a different beast in its entirety. And then you're right, you know, get an opportunity to work with Ted and then get an opportunity also to work with Tony and Darcy. I am privileged. I definitely had excellent mentors throughout my entire career, and watching, you know, Tony and Darcy arrived on campus. I might have the math wrong a little bit. I think in my fifth year as a scholar athlete, and so getting to be a scholar athlete under their leadership the first year, and then getting a chance to work alongside them. It's been really cool to watch the way that they ran their program, the way that they developed relationships, the way that they have gotten buy-in and sort of set a vision for such a disparate group of people and different goals and aspirations within a track team, how to bring all those things together into a focused effort. Just watching them put together conference rosters and conference competition weekends during our time in the CCAA and just watching all those pieces fit together. It was both informative and inspiring. And definitely something that I count as a privilege.
And so as those two have moved on to retirement, Kim Graham Miller, the new track and field head coach at UC San Diego, she had some success, you might say, as a as a college athlete.
Yeah. She's pretty all right at this running thing. I'm super excited to get to work with Coach Kim. We've had a chance to sit down a couple times and chat and sort of get an idea of her vision for what this program can be and how she likes to attack things. I think she's going to be a great fit. I know this firsthand. When you're stepping into a role that has been occupied for a number of years and in some ways, quote unquote, replacing a beloved former coaches, it's always going to be challenging. But I think one of the things that we're really, I know in my personal life I did and in talking with Coach Kim, not looking to replace anybody, looking to just sort of open the next chapter. And sort of continue the growth and development of the program. Super excited for her vision. Can't wait for her to have the rest of her staff put together for the track season, and all of us to be able to sit down and map things out and really get to work. I think I know that our team's going to love her, and I'm really excited about where she's going to take us.
That's so awesome to hear. And I should just say, for the listeners who may not be familiar with her, she just joined the staff this summer. She is an Olympic gold medalist as a runner. So clearly she was very successful in that role.
Yes, absolutely.
Nate Garcia joining us on TritonCast. I want to talk about your cross country team this fall. As we record this, you and the team are at Mammoth Lakes training. How long has that been going on, and how did that become kind of the preseason tradition?
Yeah, I believe that they first started coming up here in 93, if I'm right. So before I was even a freshman, we've been coming up here. You know, there's big physiological benefits to getting time spent at altitude for endurance athletes. And so there's been tradition of that amongst a lot of different programs and professional athletes to do an altitude stint and to get a little development early in the season up at altitude. Now, straight physiologically, straight scientifically, a 10-day stint isn't going to make, you know, massive lasting physiological change. But what you do get while you're up here is a huge amount of growth and development individually, because everything up here is harder. And going through that sort of toughness and going through that sort of tough stretch of time really helps make the rest of the season that much more manageable, and really gives you a better understanding of what you're capable of and how you can push yourself. And then also that sort of shared hard work is massive for team development. You know, we onboard, 9 new members of our team this year, bringing them up here. You know, we spent a week in town together. And they're integrating well, they're coming to practice, but they're still the new folks, right? You come up here, you spend 10 days living together, doing sort of everything together. By the time we come back off the mountain, they're just the team. There isn't the new folks and the older folks and any of that stuff. It's all just one team. And that is such a massive part in getting people onboarded. They require so much trust in one another and so much comfort with one another to push yourself out to the outer limits of what you're capable of. Like, you just can't do that if you're surrounded by people that you don't know or trust. And so that ability to develop those relationships in a really condensed, quick way is super valuable to us.
And the way the schedule lays out, is it an advantage for your team being at UC San Diego on the quarter system, right? So classes don't start for another month. And so for your team, you know, this is it, as opposed to many other Big West schools where they're also in class by now.
Yes, it's a huge advantage for us. You know, we get to spend 5 to 6 weeks each year together prior to classes starting, where all we're focused on is the training and building the team environment. It's a huge advantage to sort of jumpstart that process without the other responsibilities, the most important responsibilities, class. But to have this opportunity to have this time together is huge for us. And honestly, it is a massive advantage for our incoming freshmen, because during these 5 to 6 weeks, they are figuring out how to make this transition to living in San Diego, you know, being on this team, new group of friends, living, you know, being on campus. They can get really comfortable and really sort of locked in, so that when classes start, they're not also still in the midst of figuring out the whole transition to college. And so that gives them a huge advantage in the first quarter academically, because they're already ready to go, you know, and they're already in position to be a leader in their dorms, in their classes, with their fellow freshmen, because they're the experts.
And in the sport of cross country, for those of us who aren't as familiar with it, we might look at it as an individual sport, right? How fast did you run? What was your time? But there really is a team component. Can you explain how that is?
Yeah. The team scoring aspect of cross country is pretty neat. And it's definitely something where, you know, different coaches can have different philosophies on how they want to attack the team aspect of cross. Is it more individual? Is it more unified? We're big believers in the team side of things. So it's, you know, cross country is low score wins. Your first 5 runners across the finish line count in your scoring, and you get points equal to your place in the race. So if you finish first, you earn 1 point for the team. If you finish in 99th place, you score 99 points for the team. And then you just add up the first five finishers and the team with the lowest score wins. And so there's real advantage, not only in you running as fast as you can, but you taking teammates with you. And there's strategy of, okay, maybe you gave up one spot personally, but you helped your teammate finish four places higher. That's a win for the team. Like that's more points for the, that's a better score for the team. And right. So there's a lot that we can do in working together and really helping very intentionally bring the best out of each other, because, you know, you could win the race, but if all your teammates have horrible days, the team score is going to be, you know, huge, and we're going to be really deep. And so we do a lot of work in how do you push one another? How do you get used to, you know, training and racing alongside people who are as good or better than you are, which some of our folks did not, you know, didn't get to experience as much in high school. You know, it's a pretty rare environment for them to be able to step into a situation where, you know, there's 15 other guys, 19 other women who are, you know, at or above their level. And how do I sort of meld myself into this group? And how do I bring the best out of the people around me? So it's something that we spend a lot of time working on.
And that's pack running.
Yep. Yep. That ability to be near enough to one another, that it's going to sound a little, might sound a little out there, but to be able to be running near enough to one another, you're feeling the energy coming off that person, that you're feeling like almost a physical connection, that they are pulling you along because you're just sort of in that almost that slipstream, not physically, but you're sort of in that proximity. And how do you get comfortable doing that? And how do you get good at pulling a teammate along and saying the right thing at the right time and pushing them that way? Honestly, in a lot of ways, it's similar to, you know, rowing crew, you know, being in a boat. Like you could be great, but if the other people in the boat aren't sort of on the same page with you, aren't sort of feeding off of what you're doing, that boat's not going anywhere. And cross country, while we're not all strapped together in a boat together, it's a lot like that. And that pack running, that sort of dynamic is essential for greatness as a team.
Thank you. That's well said. You've got a new assistant this year in Mariah. What does she bring to the table?
I'm super excited to have Mariah join us. She's been a fixture in the San Diego running scene and coaching scene for a while now. She ran for and graduated from San Diego State. So I had to really get over that when I was considering hiring her, make sure that I was okay bringing on a former Aztec. I got over it, but she brings excellent high level experience competitively. She was a tremendous 800 meter runner in college. Following college, got into some post collegiate running and pivoted out to the roads and got more into more of the long distance running. And is a tremendous marathoner. You know, having had the opportunity to run at U.S. Olympic trials, is invited to the elite field of the Chicago Marathon this fall. She understands high level competition, and she's someone who not only has experienced it, but is continuing to experience it. And that voice is super useful for our athletes to have someone right there being able to say, "I understand exactly what you're feeling, because I felt it in my workout today too. And I understand the pressure that you're feeling for this competition, because I feel that for my competitions too," is a tremendous resource. And so I am super excited to have her plugged in. Her and I work really well together. I think it's going to be a great fit with her in our program.
That's really great. The season getting underway September 1st in Mammoth, and a duel against UCLA. You'll also go compete at a UC Riverside invite later in September. The Paul Short Run in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at Lehigh is one of the biggest cross-country meets in the country collegiately, and then wrapping up the season at Santa Clara. What would you consider a successful season for your teams?
You know, it's one of those things where going into each meet, we'll sort of set goals based on the teams that are coming in, you know, the teams that are showing up and sort of establishing, hey, where do we think is reasonable for us to be able to finish? What's our reach goal? Like, sort of, how are we going to try to navigate, you know, that gap and then try to perform as well as we can. I mean, anytime we go into races, our first level of comparison is always with our fellow conference members. How are we doing versus the Big West? Where do we match up? Where do we stack up? It's a very good cross-country conference. And so where would we stack up within these teams? And then we look at the NCAA West region, you know, so Pac-12 schools, WCC schools, Mountain West schools, Big Sky. There's a variety of conferences represented in the West region. And so we try to schedule meets that are going to give us an opportunity to compete against teams in the NCAA West region and see where do we stack up. You know, the top 15 teams in the West are ranked every week. What can we do to try to get in those rankings? What can we do to try to climb up into that upper echelon in the West? And then I want to expose them to national level competition. See where would we match up with teams in other regions? That was one of the things that we spent a lot of time last year, especially on the women's side, you know, just hunting regionally ranked teams. Like, how many of these regionally ranked teams can we beat? And we would look at them in the entries and say, okay, I think we can get that one or this or these three or however. And we'd sort of attack it that way. So a lot of our goals right now, without having a championship season and with cross country not being the type of sport that you'd have a record in, it's really about the sort of head-to-head matchups that we get the opportunity to have, you know, going to these large meets and getting to see a variety of schools.
We're in our final moments with Nate Garcia this week on TritonCast. How much running do you still do personally?
Not as much as I should. I am very, with my personal training right now, I'm very hot and cold. I was definitely one of those who used the COVID shutdown time to do a lot of training.
Gotcha.
I ran quite a bit. This past summer, I was not as motivated, and so I am not I'm not running as much as I would like to be. But it's something that's still a part of my life. I still love getting out there and going for a run. It's obviously a lot harder when you're not fit. I understand firsthand how hard it is to get into running if you haven't been. But it's something that I love, and when I can squeeze a few minutes in with the team, I try to do that. I'll usually, you know, make an appearance for the first 4 or 5 minutes, and they're going super easy, casual, just chatting, and I am in full race mode just to stick around with them, and then I drift off and let them go about their business, and I carry on with mine. So,
well, Nate, well, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great season.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you having me.
The Tritons open their season on September 1st when they face UCLA in a dual meet in Mammoth Lakes. You can read more on their 10 newcomers and preview that race on UCSDTritons.com. Well, you won't want to miss all new episodes of TritonCast in the month of September. Join us as we chat with the most interesting UCSD Scholar athletes, alumni, and coaches. They'll share their amazing Triton stories that you won't hear anywhere else. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you like what you heard, subscribe, rate the show, write us a brief review. And don't forget, you can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms, now including Google Podcasts, by searching TritonCast wherever you get your pods. For more on TritonCast, follow us on Twitter, @TritonCast. And if you've got suggestions for a future guest, send us a tweet or email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. We'll see you back here next week.
Been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.